So welcome to the first in what will hopefully be a three-part series that I've titled The Mystery and Majesty of the Megillah. We're not focusing on the Megillah, Megillat Esther, the story of Esther. We talked about that last year. But instead, the Megillah as kind of a halachic concept, as a mitzvah. And what we're going to spend basically all of tonight realizing is that every time we think it cannot get more confusing, and it actually gets more confusing still. But before we start diving into the sources to kind of explain the mystery before we even look at the actual mystery, so there are four mitzvot of Purim. Megillah reading, Mishloach Manot, sending gifts to one another, and Matanot Le'Evyonim, giving gifts to the poor, and the Seuda, and, you know, having a Yom Tov meal on Purim Day itself. That's also where drinking is included, also within that. Of these, the Megillah is really the crucial one. The Rambam, for instance, in his code, in his Mishneh Torah, he titles, and usually we don't get, you know, there's a question of how pedantic are we about people's wording, but with the Rambam, he tended to pretty carefully pick his words, so when he chooses specific word choices over others, some people get really interested in that, but there's definitely big, clear choices he made, which are striking, and so his laws of Purim and Chanukah, it's not Hilchot Purim v'Chanukah, but Hilchot Megillah v'Chanukah, and he sees really the sole, you know, core mitzvah of Purim to be the Megillah. And when we make the bracha, for instance, we're supposed to have in mind the fulfillment of all the other mitzvot of Purim. It's clear that the Megillah is the central mitzvah of Purim. We have other mitzvot, too, that we also have to do, but fundamentally, hearing the Megillah is the fundamental one. And what we're really going to try and do over the next 3 weeks is figure out, what is it? It's kind of a hard question to even try and process without explaining a bit more, but what is when we listen to the Megillah, what are we doing? What is it exactly as a mitzvah? There's one thing that is very, very clear about what the Megillah, what Megillat Esther is not. It is definitely not a Megillah. At least when we compare it to the other Megillot we have. We have five Megillot in total. We have Esther, we have Eicha Lamentations, and then we have Rut, Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, and we have Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. So skipping, you know, Eicha also for a second, just focusing on the other three, Rut, Kohelet, and Shir HaShirim. So we read each one of those on one of the Chagim, on Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and we all do it in the same way. Basically, we all sit down, someone gets up, reads it. It has kind of its own Megillah tune, but that's basically it. There's no fanfare, there's no pomp, there's no nothing. People just kind of maybe twiddle their thumbs, people read along, people read a commentary, people just wait for it to be over. There's always that wonderful moment that I can always see of that person who walked in, forgetting it was Chol HaMoed, you know, Shabbat Chol HaMoed, and they look down and they're like, oh no, we are rep to Megillah reading. I mistimed this whole thing. Especially Chol HaMoed Sukkot, where it's a nightmare. But basically, you know, we read it in Chol HaMoed Sukkot, okay, there's some perhaps thematic connection between the Megillah and the Yom Tov, but broadly, you know, you read it, that's it. Eicha is slightly more ritualized. We read it at night, and we're kind of in the Tisha B'Av mood, and it's clearly there to get us in the Tisha B'Av mood. You know, we want to be depressed about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, so we read a really depressing, you know, we read the depressing story about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and everyone along with it. It does have a more special tune. In fact, Eicha and Esther have mentioned this fact before. Eicha and Esther are the same tune, just one minor key, one major key. That's why if you have a really, you know, beautifully voiced person reading Eicha, it sounds like Esther. And if you have a really, you know, dirgy person reading Esther, it sounds like Eicha. But still, Eicha, apart from kind of the, you know, apart from that, you know, and the fact that it kind of, it's more central to Tisha B'Av than the other things, but it's not a mitzvah. You don't, none of these Megillot are mitzvah. You don't have to hear them. In fact, I have a friend who does not like going to shul on Tisha B'Av. I mean, doesn't really like going to shul, but he doesn't like going to shul on Tisha B'Av because, you know, he'd rather just sit at home, read a Megillah Eicha in his own time, and kind of, you know, it's depressing enough. He can read it with his own commentary and get depressed enough as he's there. There's no mitzvah to hear it with a community. None of these things, none of these other Megillot have any need for us to hear them. There are no brachot made over them. And yet for Megillah Esther, all of that changes. We make brachot. We, you know, declare it to be a mitzvah. And it's an obligation for us to fulfill on Purim. We say it both day and night, which is also very strange, which we're going to talk about and is really going to be the focus of tonight. But it's particularly strange that we do that. And finally, and the exact contours of this are kind of a debate we're not going to address, at least for now, but it needs some form of minion. Does it always need a minion? Does that minion include a minion of potential listeners? So, for instance, you know, a women's Megillah reading requires 10 women rather than kind of what we would term the classical, you know, what's a minion for all of the halachic purposes. But the reality is the Megillah has all of Megillat Esther has all of these halachic aspects to it. None of the other Megillot have it. It fits like a Megillah because of its kind of its place in Tanakh, its place in the canon. But otherwise, it doesn't actually fit in any way the paradigm of what the other Megillot are. It's something else. It's treated very differently halachically. In Jewish practice, it's just a very different kind of beast to all the other Megillot. But where things get even stranger is that, fine, it's not a Megillah. It's a mitzvah object of a Yom Tov. We have lots of mitzvah objects on Yom Tovs. And indeed, you know, we celebrate Yamim Tovim in very specific ways. And yet when you look at Purim in the Megillah, it doesn't fit that paradigm either. There is no Hallel on Purim. We're going to talk about that at length next week. But all the other Yamim Tovim, fine, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur don't, but that's for, you know, reasons well explained. But all the other Yamim Tovim have Hallel, not Purim. We don't do Hallel on Purim. And again, going back to what's going to be our focus today, the night and day. Because you do not ever do a mitzvah central to a chag on both the night and the day. If you think about it, when is the time period for hearing the shofar? The daytime. It's a daytime. So if you hear the shofar at night, nope, didn't work. Lulav 2 is a daytime mitzvah. You don't wave the Arab Aminim at night. You do it during the day. The slightly tricky one, but it's not too tricky, is matzah. Matzah is a nighttime mitzvah. We happen to eat matzah at other points on Pesach, but only at Seder night do we say, Al Achilat Matzah, who's commanded us to eat matzah. All the other times, okay, we need to make hamotzi, so we have to eat matzah, but there's no obligation to eat matzah at any other point on Pesach. Matzah is solely a nighttime mitzvah. Svirat HaOmer, counting the Omer, famously is only the nighttime. If you want to say it during the day, you do not make the bracha, because it's a nighttime mitzvah. And obviously Hanukkah, you know, we light Hanukkah candles at night. You know, all of these Yom Tov mitzvot are either daytime mitzvot or nighttime mitzvot, but not the Megillah on Purim. That's both of them. And it's not just Yom Tov mitzvot. Many mitzvot are kind of governed by this nighttime only or daytime only. Tefillin are only daytime mitzvot objects. Sit. The mitzvah is only fulfilled when they're being worn during the day. The two kind of famous examples of mitzvot that are both daytime and nighttime mitzvot are saying the Shema and the Amidah. These are both, you have to do them both at night and at day. But that's a, suddenly we have, you know, the Megillah's gone from being like that story we read on Purim to being on the same level as Shema and the Amidah, jumping all of the other mitzvot of the Chagim and just going straight up into kind of the pantheon of the most fundamental mitzvot. Okay, it's not every day, it's only, you know, one point in the year, but nonetheless, it's crazy that the Megillah is this mystery. Like, why? Why does the Megillah work like this? Why is it unique? So what we're going to try and do over the next 3 weeks is try and process this a bit further, try and understand a bit more about how it works, and hopefully start to tease out a better understanding of what its function is, what the purpose of our listening to the Megillah is on Purim, and in doing so, will hopefully kind of, as per the title, kind of reveal its majesty, but lead us to a better appreciation on Purim, so that when we're turning up to shul night and day to listen to the Megillah, we have a better sense of what it's actually fulfilling, other than just sitting and listening to a nice story and booing when we hear the name of Haman. There's something greater here. It has a more powerful purpose than being kind of just, you know, a Megillah, which in and of itself is obviously an important thing, but nonetheless, there's something more to it than this. That's not to say there's going to be kind of a grand theory. There's still kind of lots of parts of the Megillah that, you know, don't necessarily work with one another when we consider all of them, but nonetheless, lots of different ideas. The simplest answer, you could just chalk it up to Purim. Fundamentally, we treat things very differently on Purim than we do at any other point. For instance, halacha gets a lot more relaxed about cross-dressing, about drinking. Halacha is a very negative view of drinking alcohol. Not so on Purim. There, it's more complicated. There's a lot of things that usually we care a lot about that we don't seem to care about on Purim. So you could just chalk it up to kind of the quirkiness of Purim as a whole. Is also found in the Megillah, but hopefully we'll find something more to see. What I think makes this such a great topic, and so exciting when kind of delving into the kind of the Gemara sources in more depth, is that when it comes to the Chagim, when it comes to things we are so used to, it's really fascinating when the things we think are standard and normal and so obvious and clear-cut actually turn out not to be. There's kind of a, I don't know anyone here who's seen The Matrix, but the great scene in The Matrix where kind of Morpheus offers Neo the red pill and the blue pill, like, take the blue pill, you'll wake up tomorrow and you'll have forgotten everything, but like, the red pill, you're gonna be kind of opened into this world of like, craziness. For this is kind of like the red pill moment, and like, we're gonna see, oh my goodness, everything I thought I knew about the mitzvot of Purim just like, they just went. That's it. Everything I thought was so simple about Purim. Purim's a really easy festival. There's like barely anything we have to worry about not doing. You just turn up. Maybe you're wearing a costume. You listen to the Megillah. It's all very nice. It's all very fun. But all of a sudden, we're going to change all of that over the next 3 weeks by seeing all of these incredibly somewhat convoluted and complex opinions, which really start to stress test what we think we know about hearing Megillat Esther on Purim. And so what we're going to see today is, I think, something that's so fascinating for so many reasons. But I think something that's so fascinating about our reading of the Megillah, both at night and during the day, that will I think, really, really already start to show just what both its mystery, but also just how cool kind of this topic can be. So when it comes to beginning, So each week I hope to have kind of a launch point sugya. So one topic in the Gemara that's kind of our launch point for everything else. Similar to when we did Hanukkah, I have kind of an actual copy of the page of the Gemara itself. The bits we are going to be reading are also still printed and translated on the source sheet as source number one. But nonetheless, I would encourage everyone to kind of look at the page itself. Simply because one of the biggest problems with kind of source sheet shiurim, of which I do the whole time, is it kind of loses the sense of almost flavor each text has. Fundamentally, there's a lot to be said about the feeling of combing through Sefarim and kind of looking at all of them. It happens to be all of the sources we're looking at today all basically come from the same, you know, same set of sources. But nonetheless, you know, often the text and the layout, the typography, preserves a certain sense of hierarchy. You know, you could not know a word of Hebrew, and yet you'd know what's the central text on this page. And yet at the same time, something that's fascinating and is often kind of, it's both one of those things that's so obvious and yet so rarely kind of expressed, is when you look at the commentary, so in this case, on the right-hand side is Rashi, and the left-hand side is Tosafot, the text itself, the central text, is often kind of molded to conform with those commentaries. So when Tosafot, for instance, has a ton of commentary, the central text of the Gemara gets tremendously cut, you know, and moved on to, you know, you turn over a page of Gemara and it's like five lines, and on the one hand it's like, oh, this is easy, and then it's like, no, there's a reason most of the page is trying to explain it. It makes no sense, but fundamentally there is something sometimes to seeing at the text themselves in their, not obviously original tongue, but you get the idea. In the way they have often, at least in the recent past, been studied. And again, if you come across a text where it's like, it's actually found in a book that's like written in like 0.3 font, and you're like, you can't actually read it without six different magnifying glasses, it tells you something about the value Jewish history has assigned to this text versus something which is kind of printed right next to a page of Gemara. You know, it tells us something about the significance of the text, and which is sometimes lost with kind of the source sheet format. Nonetheless, we'll have plenty of reasons to look at this reproduced in the source sheet for kind of reviewing. But just to begin, it's literally three lines on this Gemara, beginning with the triangle, which you can see points leftward to the beginning. And it says the following. Va'amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Chayav Adam likrot et ha-Megillah balayla. A person is obligated to read the Megillah at night. V'lishnota bayom. And repeat it during the day. Shne'emah, as it says, so he quotes a verse from Sefer Tehillim. Elohai ekra yomam v'lo ta'aneh. V'layla v'lo dumieli. This I will admit, I will look already at what the translation is, because translating verses into Tehillim off the top of your head is never an easy task. My God, I cry by day, you answer not. By night, I have no respite. This is the statement that teaches us the crucial principle of the Megillah, that we've already talked about being such a strange and confusing aspect. We read it both. Chayav Adam likrota Megillah balayla velishnota bayom, to read it at night and to repeat it during the day. We're gonna dwell a bit more later on why this verse, but for now, this verse is seen by Chazal, indeed this Perek of Tehillim, this chapter of Psalms, Psalm 22, is very significant in the eyes of Chazal because it was recited by Esther herself as she was waiting to kind of go into Achashverosh's room uninvited. And so she cried out to God using this psalm, which is all about crying out to God. You're not answering me. Come on, please answer me. Oh my goodness. Please, please, please. That's basically its theme in kind of a modern format. So because it references night and day and it's Esther, even though it's Tehillim, it's Esther. So that's where we get night and day. Great.
I have a question.
Yes.
Before we go on. So it says that Chayav Adam Likro, but I thought that, which is to read, but I thought the mitzvah is to hear it.
So without getting into the kind of the broad halachic thing, it's fundamentally the same thing in that your reading, your listening is equivalent to your reading. Someone has to read it out loud, but it means, in this sense, we can just understand it as simply being read in front of you kind of thing. Yeah.
Great.
Not that every single individual, and we're going to see very clearly why the other way would, not that every single person has an obligation to learn how to read it and then to do it, and we're going to see very quickly why that was never kind of an expectation, but kind of looking at this obligation, and now, you know, we can happily look at it kind of in source number one format, the second half of what we're going to look at today, which is the second half of source number one, we'll look at later, no need to look at it right now. But kind of if you read this statement, and what does it seem to tell us about the relationship between the nighttime and the daytime reading? Chayav Adam Likrod HaMegillah Balayla, obligated to read the Megillah at night, V'lishnota Bayom. What does it seem to imply about the relationship between the two? Does one seem more important than the other? Does one, you know, is there some relationship between the two that from this outset seems to appear? So they're equal? That's one. No one else thinks. This is not a right or wrong. This is a subjective thing. But I read Chayav Adam Likroa et HaMegillah. You are obligated to read the Megillah at night. V'lishnota bayom, and repeat it during the day. I kind of read that as saying, well, this lishnota, repeat it, kind of implies you do it again. But it's kind of, you know, the main one is the night, and you just redo the. Do over the night again the next day. There's no right or wrong with night is more important or they're both equal. But yeah, it could be read as equal. I see this as kind of saying night is more important than we repeat it during the day, or the day is, or you know. But yeah, but either way, they seem to be either have a relationship to one another where they're basically one in the. Well, the question is then, if they are equal, are they one in the same? As in asking a question we're not going to answer right now, but when we think of a mitzvah, is it therefore one mitzvah with part A and part B? Or is it two different mitzvot, one at the night, one at the day? These are kind of the fun questions people ask, and that we're not going to dwell on right now, but fundamentally fine. There is either Lila is more important, or alternative, there is no hierarchy. This is where we get to kind of the red pill moment, and this is where everything we think we know about the Megillah is about to completely and utterly fall apart. When I came across this not too long ago, I was absolutely floored. And basically, by the end, it's going to more feel like the red pill is constantly being forced down your throat, because basically we're going to look at a bajillion sources now that all are basically proving the same point, because it's so crazy. We have to realize how obvious a thing this is, that it's not just like found in one source, but is literally everything. Okay, and with that very introduction that cannot live up to that hype, okay, let's take a look at source two. So I am gonna read source two in a second. Source two in and of itself, by the way, is mind-blowing, simply because we think of Purim either being celebrated on the 14th of Adar or the 15th of Adar. The 15th of Adar is for Shushan Purim, for walled cities. 14th of Adar is the first Mishnah in Masechet Megillah attests. There are actually multiple dates and you can read the Megillah on, you can celebrate Purim, and that will fall out for different permutations. I'll read it, I'll explain it, and hopefully, it will either be noticed or we'll try and see if we can tease out what's crazy about this Mishnah. So it says the following. This is the very first Mishnah of Masechet Megillah. Megillah nikreit ve'achad asar, b'shnei masar, b'shlosha asar, b'arba asar, b'chamisha asar. Lo pachod ve'lo yoter. So the Megillah can be read the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th of Adar. You can't go later than that, nor earlier than that. So what, you know, why? How do we get to all of those dates? Kurachin hamukafin choma mimot Yehoshua bin Nun, Korin v'chamisha asar, that we know, walled cities from the times of Yehoshua bin Nun, they read it on the 15th. Kfarim v'ayarot gedolot, Korin v'arba asar. Everyone else, basically villages and city, large cities, they read on the 14th, they celebrate Purim, that's what we do to this day. Ella, Shehakfarim Magdimin Liyom Haknisa, but for the villages, the small villages, they can move it forward to the day of assembly. And what the next Mishnah kind of talks about, which we're not going to look at, is basically all the different permutations of where this Yom Haknisa falls on, which gets you all the way back potentially to the 11th, depending on Purim is. What is the Yom Haknisa? So basically something we forget nowadays living in the 21st century where we have... Yeah. So this may be a familiar idea for some, but basically, you know, we live in the 21st century, we have cars, and even if we don't live in a place with cars, we live in a place with Chabads. So basically, access to lots of people and Jewishness is never too far away. But if you think of just the recent past, you know, if you say lived in Salem, back in the day of the witch trials, traveling to Boston was not something you'd do, you know, on any frequent basis, but there would be, you know, if we translate that concept now into kind of the Jewish history, there would be a couple of days a week where you would travel in from the small villages to the big towns, that were market days. And basically what's going on here is, and it's, the exact reason is somewhat debated, but the two most popular ones are either, you travel in from your small town for the market day, into the big city, wherein lay someone who was an expert at reading the Megillah, because no one in the small village knows how to read it. And so there you'd find someone, there'd be a shul there, whatever it may be. You got to hear your Megillah then. So even if market day was, you know, would fall out to be the 11th of Adar, you'd get the guy, he'd read a Megillah for all the people from the town. Yay, we did it. We fulfilled our obligation. Alternatively, small towns, but people kind of actually got together kind of more en masse during market day. So again, if you need a minion, or if you need kind of, you know, you need communal gatherings for things, you have to wait until everyone's coming from, you know, their small little homesteads or whatever into kind of the village center almost. So, you know, it's kind of two different models. Is it, you know, we think of small villages around a big city, or alternatively, you know, homesteads around kind of a more communal place. But either way, this is what's happening here. We have people coming in just twice a week from their farms or whatever else, from their small villages to the market, and that's when they get these things done. This is also why we read Torah only on Monday and Thursday mornings, market days. Really, we should read Torah every single day of the week, but back then, people weren't able to do so. And so we only read it on the days everyone was gathered in. That's what this Mishnah teaches us. Basically, to allow everyone, this Megillah is so important People must do it even a few days early. They do it at the earliest possible opportunity, or the closest possible opportunity to the actual day of Purim, which could go as far back as the 11th. There you go. What? Now, kind construct a picture in your head of what I've just described. You're traveling for market day. Now, when are you hearing the Megillah?
Daytime.
Yeah. When are you not hearing the Megillah?
Nighttime.
Yeah. The very first Mishnah of Masechet Megillah paints a picture of people only needing to fulfill their obligation for daytime. Now, you may think, okay, that does sound pretty wild. That seems, you know, crazy, but it's kind of, it's implied. It's not, you know, okay, cool reading.
It's practical, because otherwise these people wouldn't hear it at all.
Correct, but the idea that we've suddenly gone from talking about Megillah needing to be a night and daytime thing to all of a sudden seeming to have a good case to make that we only need to read it during the day, that's already striking. But things actually get crazier a lot quicker when we take a look at source number 3. So source number 3 and together with source number 4 are the Mishnayot in the second parak of Masechet Megillah. We're not actually going to read the whole thing because it's just basically a laundry list. And in fact, in the English, I didn't even, at a certain point, I just put ellipses. Honestly, I didn't even look at this translation before I really copied and pasted it, which is why there's an amazing, I took it from Sefaria, and you'll see on the third line of source 3, the Lulab, which I giggled when I realized that had been left in there. But anyway, especially in England, where for me a loo is a toilet, I just, you know, Lulab conjures an entirely different and thoroughly unpleasant image. But let's read this Mishnah. Kol Hayom Kasher L'Kriyat HaMegillah. The entire day is, you know, you can, and this is true. You don't have to hear the Megillah in the morning. Indeed, and I don't know if there's any shuls in Boston that do it, but definitely in larger Jewish communities and larger shuls, they often have Megillah readings at other points in the day. I know a previous shul in Highland Park, New Jersey, I think used to have an afternoon Megillah reading because some people it's just, you know, it's inconvenient in the morning, or some people are sleepy in the mornings, and you know, for a variety of reasons, some people just wanted a quick Megillah reading. You don't have to hear it during the, you know, first thing in the morning. You know, you can hear it at any other point. Ula kriyat halal, or tkiyat shofar, or letilat lulav, etc. All of these things. All of these things are daytime mitzvah. And we've already spoken about the difference between daytime mitzvah and nighttime mitzvah. And basically what this Mishnah teaches us is a very important principle. Barring, you know, some really important exceptions, like kriyat shema and davening, which do have kind of expiry times. Fundamentally, if you have a mitzvah that has to be done during the day, it doesn't matter when you do it, as long as you do it. There may be other factors to consider. You know, you want to try and do a mitzvah as early as possible in the day. But this is why, for instance, with Sukkot, it's almost sometimes people forget that you don't have to wave Arab Aminim first thing in the morning. That's why there's no, you know, you can bring it to shul and do it before halal. There's no urgency to get it done before a certain time in the day. Fine. And obviously it's Masechet Megillah, so it began with, you know, listing the Megillah as a perfect example of this. And then the following Mishnah says the following. Kol halayla, kasher l'ktzirat ha'omer, ulehekter chalavim ve'evarim. All of the night is good for cutting the omer, burning various types of incense and fat. Zeh haklal, davar shemitzvah tov bayom, kasher kol hayom. If the mitzvah is a day mitzvah, you have the whole day. Davar shemitzvah tov v'alayla, kasher kol halayla. If it's a nighttime mitzvah, you have the whole night. What is really, really striking about these two Mishnayot? Considering what we've already seen in source number 2. What is the archetypal mitzvah, daytime mitzvah, according to source number 3?
Reading Megillah
is the archetype. What is completely absent from its list of nighttime mitzvot? Reading the Megillah. It's not, you would think, like, this is also Masechet Megillah, like it begins with Megillah, and it's like, the whole day is for the reading of the Megillah. For nighttime, Tzirat HaOmer, like, it's now starting to get very confusing because our entire premise, our entire practice is nighttime Megillah reading, daytime Megillah reading, and yet we don't have Kol HaLaila Kasher L'Kriyat HaMegillah. That's just not even on there. It doesn't make the list. It doesn't make the cut. We have now two sources that seem to indicate very strongly the Megillah only being read during the daytime. Only being a daytime mitzvah, and kind of a pretty clear-cut daytime mitzvah. A very important daytime mitzvah. And this kind of, already, if this is true, it answers kind of one of the big questions, which is, why is it so weird compared to all of the other mitzvot? Well, the answer is, well, it's not really, just as all the other Yamim Tovim have either a daytime or nighttime mitzvah, so does Purim, and it's just a daytime mitzvah. But this is, you know, this seems kind of crazy. And then things got even crazier when I'd made a mental note to keep on checking the Tosefta, and then I actually checked the Tosefta today, and I almost, you know, whooped at finding such an explicit statement. So the Tosefta, for those who are unaware, so we have the Mishnah edited by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, so what that means is he took all of the Tanaitic statements, so the Tanaim lived from, you know, destruction of the Beit HaMikdash until the 200s, and basically, you have, you know, they are saying all of these statements, you know, Hillel and Shammai, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, etc., etc., etc. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi basically takes a bunch of the statements and edits them. You know, he picks and chooses and puts, you know, some in there and some get left out. Fine, and that's the Mishnah. Ta-da! It's kind of, you know, it's the ultimate, you know, the first code from which kind of the Gemara and both the Yerushalmi and the Bavli kind of sprout. The Tosefta is a separate collection of statements of Tanaim. It actually goes one generation later than Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It's about three times the size. Really, really fascinating. Chazal themselves in the Gemara will often reference non-Mishnayot, but other Tanaitic statements, which are called Braitot, which are, if they don't explicitly contradict a Mishnah, are very, very crucial for them in helping flesh out and understand how certain laws work. Not every Braita is in the Tosefta. Not every Tosefta is quoted in the Bavli as a Braita, but nonetheless, the Tosefta is a fascinating other work of Chazal that is really, really cool to explore for a bunch of reasons. And the most famous kind of commentator on the Tosefta is a modern one, which is Shaul Lieberman, who wrote this just epic commentary on the Tosefta, Tosefta Kepshuta, which basically just cites everything and anything on the topic related to that. So I happen to know in his commentary, he basically then gives basically this entire share in like a footnote, which I read later. But what does the Tosefta say? Kriya kar'aba laila lo yatsa yedei chovato. If you read the Megillah at night, what happens?
You're not done.
You didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So it not only, you know, until now, I mean, it seemed pretty clear it's a daytime mitzvah, but if you wanted an explicit indication that it's a daytime-only mitzvah, you know, what happens if you heard shofar at night? No, doesn't count. You still have to hear it during the day. What happens if you hear Megillah at night, according to this Tosefta, and implied by these Mishnayot we've read? Nope. It's a daytime thing. In source number two, we thought maybe it's a concession. Maybe everyone else is hearing night and day, but for villagers we make a concession. But what seems very clear already in sources three and four is, well, hold on a second, the Megillah is actually a daytime mitzvah. And then we have explicitly in source number five, a Tosefta. Now again, Tosefta is different to a Mishnah. It's not as codified, but fundamentally points to a strain of thought within the Tanaim that you don't read the Megillah at night. It's a daytime mitzvah only. And just kind of one more ramming this down our throats, just to prove this point more, we can learn it from another example, which is what we may call like halachic pedanticism. So if you take a look at source number six, which is talking about a different law, but is important nonetheless, the Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Amar Rava. Su'udat Purim she'achla balayla lo yatsa yedei chovato. If you ate your Purim Seder at night, doesn't work. It has to be during the daytime of Purim, not Purim night. Why? My timer. Yemei mishteh v'simcha, because Megillat Esther refers to yemei mishteh v'simcha. V'simcha, days of gladness, days of feasting and gladness. Now, most of us, when we read Megillat Esther and we read the term yemei mishteh v'simcha, we just think days, general days, you know, Monday and Tuesday are days. We don't think too much of it, nothing too exciting here, but, you know, Rava has a bit of, you know, what I would call like halachic pedanticism, no, days. Literally days. Days and not nights. Now, that's kind of a repeated refrain in other kind of halachic contexts, and vice versa, but, you know, it specifically means the days only. And if you look at source number 7, which is taken from the Megillah, which is kind of the broader mandate of Purim, V'hayamim ha'ele nizkarim v'nasim b'chol dor v'dor mishpacha u'mishpacha mishpacha mishpacha medina u'medina v'ir v'ir v'yimei ha'purim ha'ele lo ya'avru mitoch ha'yehudim v'zichram lo yasuf mizaram. These days are recorded and observed in every generation, every family, every province, and every city, and these days of Purim shall never cease among the Jews. V'yimei ha'purim ha'ele. So as many people point out, you can reapply that halachic pedanticism to the whole of Purim. All of the mitzvot of Purim only apply to v'imei ha-Purim, the days of Purim, meaning the daytime of Purim, because again, Purim can be one of multiple days, but we're talking explicitly about the daytime of Purim. What all of these sources seem to suggest, with varying degrees of compellingness, is that the Megillah is only read during the daytime. It's originally, it is, in the times of the Tanaim, it is a daytime mitzvah. So once again, let's turn to source number 1. Va'amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Chayav Adam likrot et haMegillah balayla velishnota bayom. A person is obligated to read the Megillah at night or the daytime. Who was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? He lived shortly after, 200 CE. He's the first generation of Amoraim, living in the land of Israel, living in the area of Lod. And so he's kind of one of the first, following the generation of the Tanaim, he's one of the first, one of the big heavy hitters, of the Gemara. And he, he's a first generation Amora, and what's he doing here? It sounds crazy, but what's he doing?
He contradicted everything.
It's not contradicting everything, but...
He's adding something.
Yeah, he is adding a Megillah reading. He adds a new Megillah reading. And this is made, this point is an explicit point by Rabbi Shlomo. HaKohen of Vilna, who passed away in 1905, he was the famous Av Beit Din of Vilna. He was the editor of the Vilna Shas, which is this, which is, the Gemara as we have it. He writes in his Binyan Shlomo that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi instituted a second Megillah reading at night. From the times of Purim, Mordechai and Esther instituted a Megillah reading at daytime, and this was observed throughout to the period of the Tanaim. And then Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi comes and adds an extra Megillah reading. You now read it both at night and then you are repeating it during the day. Now, what's interesting about this topic is, a lot of halachic figures don't like this idea of the Binyan Shlomo. I mean, lots of halachic figures try to come up with other ways to suggest against, to preserve the nighttime daytime. The Me'iri, one of the famous medieval Rishonim, suggests what people will do is they would go from they would bring someone back with them, from the town to the villages, which is, and then he would read it for them at the night. There are lots of other suggestions people try to make, but it seems the simplest argument to make from all of these sources we've seen is that it was a daytime mitzvah until Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi comes along and adds a second component to it, a second dimension, an additional Megillah reading to take place at night. Often when we think of kind of the role of Chazal and mitzvot, there are kind of two models. There is the coming up with something new, which is what we see here. And alternatively, there is kind of the Victorians and tennis. Like tennis existed long before the Victorians, but what they did was they came up with its rules. And that's a very, that's kind of a British Empire thing to do, is you take a sport that everyone's playing and you either force your own sport to be played instead of it because it's similar enough, or you codify all the rules. And often that's what we actually see Chazal doing. And we see Chazal kind of taking practices that already exist and giving them, more contours, more details. Often you do come across some halachot where very frankly, the Gemara will be like, because people were doing X, therefore this was, you know, this is what was observed. And you know, sometimes, I think I've mentioned this before in other contexts, the Christian Bible is a great source of early customs and practices of the Jewish people. And so we think of something like Netilat Yadayim. And washing hands, we think of that as kind of something that we don't find until the world of Chazal. No, the Christian Bible talks about, you know, Jews washing their hands long before kind of the Mishnah. And so, you know, there is a large element of often Chazal, or simply kind of codifying and bringing order to practices already in existence. But here we have the complete opposite. Says Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, now you do it both at night and the day. And really the clearest evidence of this is the story that follows. Again, if you want to turn back to the actual page of the Gemara itself. So if you look at where the triangle is and, you know, count the three lines down to the very last word on that third line, Savor, we read the following. Savor mine le mikre valaila vile minta matnitin dide bi yamama. Some of his students misinterpreted Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement. They thought that now they would read the now is kind of me reading my bias in, but they thought you read the Megillah at night and you learn Mishnah, the Mishnayot of Masechet Megillah, during the day. Now the reason for this is kind of that makes a lot of sense. What does Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi say? Chayev Adam likrot et haMegillah balayla v'lishnota bayom, which we've been translating as repeat. Lishnota means sheni. But there's another way to use, Lishnota sounds like another word, which is Mishnah. Mishnah, Lishnota, the kind of the same kind of, you know, to learn. They're learning Torah, so they were learning Torah together. They would learn the Mishnayot rather than reading the Megillah. Amar lohu Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya turns to them, Ledidi mifarish li mina de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. No, explicitly was taught to me Rabbi Chiya bar Abba that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi meant repeat the Megillah both during at night and during the day. Kagon da amrei inshi avor parashata da va'atinye. Which is a quote, a phrase people will often say, which is, I'll conclude the section and then review it. That's what Lishnota means. It means to review it, to go over it again, to repeat it. But what does the, after hearing of the statement Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, again, you know, it's already kind of striking that for all of the laws of Megillah we have in the Mishnah, we don't have the nighttime, daytime thing made explicit. But what's the very first thing that happens after Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi declares both a nighttime and a daytime reading? No, so what do his students do? What, in terms of the student's story, what's the reaction to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's declaration that you have to do it at night and at day? Yeah, there's confusion. You don't get people confused if they know what they're already supposed to be doing. There's utter confusion after he makes a statement. Now no one knows what they're supposed to be doing, and everyone's interpreting the ambiguous word Lishnota in different ways because no one's quite sure what it means. And so you can read this story as very much confirming everything we've said until this point. Everyone was used to a daytime reading. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi comes along and says, now nighttime and daytime, and everyone's like, huh? What do we do now? Oh, nighttime we read it, and then we learn Mishnayot. And now we learn Mishnayot during the day. And it could also kind of complicate what we've been saying, and now, you know, it really shifts the focus of the Megillah, because the way they interpret it, all of a sudden the focus of the Megillah goes from the daytime, which is everything we've seen until now, and now moves to the nighttime. But fundamentally, what seems to emerge from all of these sources is this idea that the Megillah was originally a daytime practice only, that then becomes a nighttime and daytime practice. The question, we're not done yet in terms of exploring this specific aspect, but it kind of already set up what we're going to start talking about next week. The question now to concern ourselves with is so which one, when we turn to kind of halachic practice, which one's more important? What is the relationship between the two? Because we started with nighttime and daytime, we do them both. we make, you know, at least Ashkenazi practice, we make the brachot on all the brachot on both of them. And, you know, we don't seem to distinguish between them. And yet all of a sudden now we have major questions over, well, are they the same? Do we treat them the same way? Is one Megillah reading more important than the other? And if so, which one? Is it the quote-unquote original Megillah reading, in which it was only during the daytime? Or is it perhaps the nighttime reading, which was specially instituted for some reason? And then maybe that gains a certain level of importance, more than any other. So what we're going to start looking at next week is delving further into kind of the halachic sources as they start. Again, very few of the halachic sources explicitly address this daytime-nighttime thing. No one says as bold a statement as the Binyan Shlomo that it was never done beforehand, but we'll start to see halachic sources that start to terse out the primacy of one versus the other, what that means, and what that also means for what the Megillah is. Because if they're one and the same, that tells us something. But if one is more important than the other, and that one serves an important function, that tells us a lot about Purim. It tells us a lot about the Megillah reading. And in fact, if they're both different, it tells us a lot about the different Megillah readings. If nighttime Megillah reading and daytime Megillah reading are effectively separate, and nighttime Megillah reading is about A, and daytime Megillah reading is about B, then it means at night we turn up to Shul and we're like, oh, we're doing this right now. And B, we turn, and daytime, we're like, oh, we're doing B right now. And it's actually something different, even with the same stuff, which makes for a lot of cool conceptual thinking that we'll start discussing next week. But what I want to turn to for the rest of today, very briefly, the potential question of why. If we follow kind of the threads of everything until now, that Megillah reading genuinely was. And again, kind of from a halachic perspective, there's a lot of resistance to seeing it this way. But if we kind of take this historical perspective that Megillah reading was only originally read during the day, that was what Mordechai and Esther instituted, and then only in the times of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi did nighttime Megillah reading get instituted, the question becomes, why? So I have no, obviously, definitive answer on this, but I came up with it's not a wacky theory. It's not actually a wacky theory at all, but it's just right now the exact evidence to be able to muster to prove it completely is not so easy because I only started thinking about it today and I was asking the person who's one of, you know, who's pretty knowledgeable on this stuff, and we couldn't come up with too much supporting evidence, but kind of I'm getting carried away with myself, so let me explain. The key thing that jumps out at me here is the verse Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi uses to prove one must read the Megillah at night and at day. Elohai, ekra yomam velo ta'aneh. My God, I cry by day, you don't answer me. Velaila velo dumyali. At night, I have no respite. Now, look. You know, this is not to say every time Chazal quote a verse to prove a mitzvah, it's more obvious. But it seems a weird choice. Unless it tells us something kind of thematic about the Megillah. Maybe we're crying, but we don't tend to associate that kind of idea with Purim. It seems a weird choice. Moreover, if you read Masechet Megillah, one thing Masechet Megillah is basically not exactly, but practically a line-by-line reading of the Megillah from which everything possible is learned. You would think, and what is learned, you know, we've seen, you know, how we can read Yamim as being Yamim, and, you know, we're learning a fundamental, crucial, ultimate halacha of Megillah, and we're not deriving it from Megillat Esther. We're deriving it from Tehillim. Why? So I kind of already said right at the beginning, well, because this Tehillim is connected by Chazal in the Gemara and Megillah, and also somewhere in the Gemara and Masechet Yoma too, to having been said by Esther. And this is actually a huge buzzer going off, because there's something really cool about this Perek of Tehillim. I'm going to give it away with the way I phrase this question, but there's another, not for us a biblical character, but for a lot of people in this world a biblical character, for whom Tehillim 22 is central. It's not Esther waiting to see Ahasuerus as Chazal depict it, but it's someone else, not in our Bible. We don't like him. But nonetheless, there's someone else who is very popularly seen as having recited Tehillim Chaf Bet. Anyone want to take a guess? Jesus. Jesus on the cross is Psalm 22 for the early Christian, early Christianity. Exactly, that is the previous verse. God, God, why have you forsaken me is the previous verse. That's the explicit verse Chazal connect to Esther before Ahasuerus. And here we have, and Chazal connect that same Tehillim, not to obviously Jesus, because why would they? It's Chazal, but instead to Esther in and of itself. Okay, great. What we have here is an example. There are a bunch of fascinating ones of basically anti-Christian polemics in Chazal, where they read Darshan, they re-expound verses that Christians attach tremendous significance to, and instead saw tremendous Jewish significance in them instead. But there's a bit more to it than this. So as my friend AJ Berkovitz, who hopefully at some point will be able to give at least one share at some point in the shul, while he is in the Boston area, he has his essay literally is published on this very thing. Is there something else about Purim that we have completely forgotten nowadays? No, it's an anti-Christian holiday. The fifth century, for example, in the late fifth century, there's a poem, which basically compares, you know, likens Haman to Jesus. There's a lot of that, you know, imagery, but it also mocks Jesus at the same time. And it's basically Jesus complaining about being on the cross, and Haman's like, yeah, I had it worse. Because remember, how does Jesus die on a cross? How does Haman die? I mean, being hung, or potentially some people read Haman's death as also crucifixion. Similar method, similar type of death. Not something uncommon in that time of the world, you know, in the Persian world. But fundamentally, you know, one scholar has even called it the Passion of Haman, this poem. It basically completely ridicules and mocks kind of this central idea of Christianity, and it becomes kind of a polemic in and of itself. In fact, earlier in the 5th century, there's wonderful evidence for this kind of thing, there was legislation brought against the Jewish community because the Christians were unhappy with the fact that the Jews were not only burning effigies on Haman, of Haman on Purim, which apparently was a thing back in the day, but they were also burning crosses, not KKK style, but, you know, ridiculing style, ridiculing, you know, and that's, once again, speaks to this connection of anti-Christian polemic found within Purim. Purim is somehow for some reason, it's pretty clear cut, it's pretty obvious. Haman is associated with Jesus, there's a tremendous dislike for both figures in Jewish history, and so he becomes a figure, you know, both of them become a figure for the same polemics, while at the same time we counter the famous, you know, psalm scene for Jesus with a psalm used, you know, with Esther. So, the question then becomes, could there be something going on here with the insistence of reading the Megillah at night? If we're going to use a verse which is very obscure, except in its value as an anti-Christian polemic, to justify a practice, a new practice, that's where things can potentially get really interesting. What prompts Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi to institute this new Megillah reading? You know, it's hard to explain what, but what prompts him to use that verse? What prompts him to use a verse which best known association is an anti-Christian polemic? So what I, you know, would want to argue, again, can I find the evidence to match it up? I really hope so. AJ was able to suggest some tentative potential reasons as to why it could maybe be. We can find evidence 100 years after Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, to Christian practices that were taking place around Purim time that could maybe sync up as to why he's not reading the Megillah. And I mean, it could just be, you know, let's double down on the polemic, but I'm a rabbi, he's a scholar, and that's not a good enough reason for scholars. But fundamentally, you know, I want to roll with this idea, providing I can actually find something to prove it, but I think it's a potentially cool idea as the whole motivation for Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is to further this kind of this element of Purim that we no longer celebrate, but nonetheless something central to Chazal at the time as they're fighting kind of tooth and nail over the future of what becomes Judaism, whether it goes the Christian route or whether it goes the Jewish route, and they're fighting for this right now. And so they take what is a central holiday for anti-Christian kind of sentiment within the Jewish population and use that, you know, to institute a new practice, something potentially at least with some interesting connotations. Regardless of whether or not that's true, it's unequivocally true that, you know, the anti-Christian polemic found within Purim, that is bona fide, you know, much scholarly literature has been written, you know, proving this point. But, you know, what no one else, you know, seemingly has done anything on is whether, you know, the fact that this whole Megillah thing was only originally a daytime and then it's created at nighttime using a verse from an anti-Christian polemic is potentially a suggestion as to why, or at least half of the reason as to why we end up getting a second Megillah reading at night. But as of yet, no great reason as to what specifically motivates a second reading apart from the polemical aspect. But hopefully, I'll be able to find something to suggest it. You know, I'm going to probably give this like a couple of days and then give up. But hopefully, able to find something really cool to further suggest why we get the second Megillah reading.